Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is March 2nd, 2016. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 16,899, the NASDAQ at 4703, and the S&P at 1986. We're taking listeners' tax questions this evening. So if there are any tax questions out there, the lines will be open at 610-758-8810. We can talk live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann. She's in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your call, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio if you're talking live on air with me so we can talk without the delay, without confusion. And if you are not going live on air, she'll write the question down and bring it into the studio. So a couple different ways to ask questions this evening. Again, that phone number is 610-758-8810. And we are taking listeners' tax questions this evening. We want to get those tax returns, don't we? Get them done. Let's get those done. So if there's questions, please give us a call, 610-758-8810. Again, while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. Remember, we do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. So until we have some questions come in, I will just mention a few areas where we have been seeing questions and a little bit of confusion. And I've talked about this on some of the prior shows. And recall that if you maybe are new to listening to the show, there are podcasts available of shows we've done in the past, and they're available on wdiy.org, and they're also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can download those and listen to them whenever you want. And I know I had done a show where I talked in particular about these Form 1095s, the health coverage reporting. So those are big questions. We're going to talk about those as we go through the show tonight. I have my first question, Dylan from Bethlehem. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Dylan called and asked, if you sell on eBay on the side, what is the criteria for reporting on taxes? Well, Dylan, it's you're self-employed basically then. You're selling, goods on eBay, and I would expect you have kept track of what you might have paid for the things you're selling on eBay. And you're hoping to make a profit, and that's why you're doing it. Now, perhaps you're not making a profit, and you're just kind of not really doing it for profit. It's just like a hobby, and you're just selling a few things here and there, and you don't make any money on it. You may not have reporting requirements, but if you're someone who's doing this on eBay as a business, trying to make money, then you're going to file a Schedule C as a sole proprietor and report your income and the cost of the item. So the profit would be your sale proceeds less your cost of goods. And then you may have, sometimes people will have their own website to promote this. You might have some costs relating to that. But self-employment income. I caution people on doing this. You want to be careful not to get hung up, because there may be so many more other requirements around this that you may not make money in the end. maybe your tax preparation bill is going to go up because of the extra reporting information. Sales tax. I'm not, I tell folks I don't do sales tax, so if there are sales tax involved, that's a whole nother complication. So you just want to be aware of if you're going to do this and you're doing it for a profit, there would be extra reporting you would do. But if you are self-employed, it's a Schedule C that you're reporting. Okay, Dylan, I hope that helps a little bit. It, you know, I caution people on getting too involved in that. Okay, folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Regarding the health coverage reporting, a lot of people have called and said, I haven't received my Form 1095 yet, or someone said I need a 1095 and I haven't received it yet. So the 1095 is a new reporting form that we have that indicates what kind of health coverage we've had. And there are three different 1095s. One's a 1095A, there's a 1095B, and a 1095C. And the 1095A is really the one that people have to wait to file their tax return. You want that one for a particular reason, which I'll tell you in a minute. For people who had their own health care that they bought independently or that they have through their employer, if they had it for the full year, you will get a statement from the health insurance company reporting your health coverage for the full year, 1095B. If you are employed and you have employer-provided health insurance, that's going to be Form 1095C. But basically, if you had health coverage for the full year, independent health coverage through the employer or that you have paid for yourself, there's a box that you're going to check on page 2 of the return. I think it's like box 62 or line 62 on page 2 of the return. You're going to check the box saying that you had full coverage. Also, you have to indicate that you had full year coverage for your spouse and or any dependents. The 1095A is for folks who obtained health insurance from the marketplace or the exchange, as they used to call it. That Form 1095A is going to be important because you may have qualified for a premium reduction. So your health insurance premiums may have been reduced and you're paying a smaller amount because the government is covering the rest of it. Or if you did not elect to have that reduction up front, you may be entitled to a tax credit on your tax return, a premium tax credit. That is if you fall under certain poverty levels, and those poverty levels vary depending on the family size. So if you have to go through a calculation as to whether you are entitled to the premium reduction or if you're going to be entitled to the premium tax credit, that's why you need the 1095A. Those should have already been issued and you should have already received them. The IRS extended the filing time for the 1095B and 1095C, I believe. So both of those may come later, I think by the end of March. So you do not have to wait for those to file your tax return if you had the full year coverage and all of your dependents did as well. So you can proceed. All right, I hope that's helpful. Again, that's the Form 1095 healthcare information. 1095A people need to pay attention to that. Also, one other thing, if you are someone who had employer coverage but refused it and maybe need to prove that it was more expensive, it wasn't affordable for you, you may also need that 1095C in that situation. All right, folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are taking listeners' tax questions this evening. If you have questions about your tax preparation, the phone number here is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810, or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. So we just briefly talked about Forms 1095, the healthcare coverage. Some other things that are coming up, which, you know, for tax preparers, this is just a little bit of a nightmare. And if you're someone who pays to have someone prepare your tax return, you may want to decide if this is worth it or not. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the Pennsylvania unreimbursed employee business expenses. For federal purposes, if someone has unreimbursed employee business expenses, you file a Form 2106, and if you itemize deductions, it is a miscellaneous itemized deduction on Schedule A. Some people itemize, maybe they'd be entitled to it, but then there's the second layer. It has to exceed 2% of your page one income. So a lot of people don't get to take miscellaneous itemized deductions because the threshold's too high. So even if you have unreimbursed employee business expenses, they may not be enough to be allowed as a deduction. On Pennsylvania, though, it's right off of the income. So a lot of people, while they might not benefit for federal purposes, may file the UE form for Pennsylvania purposes. And I don't know if people in the past have been too aggressive or more aggressive than Pennsylvania, you know, wanted them to be. But in, I believe, 2013, we started to see more questions from Pennsylvania about these UE forms. 2014, for sure, they're automatically sending letters. Well, I shouldn't say automatically. In some cases, what we have seen is the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue is sending notices to the taxpayers saying the deductions on the UE form are not allowed unless you can prove that they were necessary, et cetera, and that the employer signs off on it. So I don't know if what they're trying to do is give it such an extra level of scrutiny and hoops to jump through for the taxpayer that the taxpayers are just going to end up, you know, not filling out the UE form anymore. I think it doesn't seem to be targeting the folks who have things like union dues. That's very identifiable and verifiable, usually on someone's year-end pay stub. There is, if you pay union dues, you'll see union dues on the pay stub, and it's typically through payroll deduction. So I don't think Pennsylvania has a problem with that. And then if you're filing the Pennsylvania return, you fill out the UE form, you show the name of your union, the amount, and it's a deduction against your income. Pennsylvania doesn't give us too many deductions. So this was kind of nice for the people who had, you know, union dues. Very easy to do. And then it's also a deduction on your local return as well. Union dues, pretty easy. Where it gets more confusing, or, you know, I think more arguable by Pennsylvania as to whether it's a valid unreimbursed employee business expense, is when you have folks who are taking deductions for things like mileage and entertainment and meals and different things like that. So Pennsylvania is looking to have folks either get a letter from their employer or a copy of the employer's employee expense reimbursement policy or a signed affidavit. Now, I haven't done any of these yet, but it's just out there, especially for folks who are doing returns on their own. This might be important for you. And again, it might only happen if Pennsylvania sends you a notice. But I would just be ready with backup, your documentation for the expenses that you're taking. So if you're a salesman and the employer doesn't reimburse you for mileage and you have to claim that as a deduction yourself, you want to make sure that you have mileage logs and what we call contemporaneous record keeping, where you say, okay, here's my calendar, Monday through Wednesday I'm on the road, these are all the locations I'm going to, here are the miles, this miles times the, you know, the federal rate, here's my deduction. Keep track of all those records, keep it with your backup, with your tax return, such that if Pennsylvania questions or sends you a notice, could be 6 months from now, could be a year and a half from now, they have 3 years to, you know, look at your tax return, you want to make sure you have that those records in your folder. Also, you want to make sure that the employer would be willing to sign off that these are valid unreimbursed employee business expenses for you. Okay, so that could be a little complicated. You want to make sure that you're documenting all of those expenses, and there could be any number of them. I just gave you a couple examples. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. And you can call and talk live on air or off air, whatever you are more comfortable doing. Another thing that's going on, you know, it seems like a lot of the questions end up being around the Pennsylvania returns and the local returns. At this point, the federal returns are the easy returns. It's Pennsylvania and the locals that are so difficult. There is something going on with Pennsylvania regarding a reconciliation of our W-2 wages, reconciling our Medicare wages to our Pennsylvania wages if they're different. So Pennsylvania is expecting to see that when you're filing your return, if you look on, there's a form called the W-2S, and it'll show that there's a column for federal wages, Medicare wages, and Pennsylvania wages. They want to see those comparisons. And I can talk more about those in just a minute, but I have a call from Tom in Coopersburg. Tom, can you hear me?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
My question really is kind of a logistics question. I work for a company that is headquartered out of state.
Mm-hmm.
My office is in Fort Washington, but I live in the Allentown area. And I noticed that my local taxes, it shows that they're withholding for Fort Washington.
Yeah.
And I guess my question is, since I live in a different municipality,
right,
is there some kind of true-up or something? I mean, how do I know? Is my local municipality getting those dollars somehow? And because I want them to, how does that work?
Well, what happens when you are employed? At some point, they should have given you a form to identify your local residency. So I'm not sure with your employer if they would have done that, because a lot of out-of-state employers have never faced these locals that we have in Pennsylvania. We have more local entities than the entire rest of the country. It's true. So if they're headquartered out of state, they might not know about that. But in Fort Washington, that's Fort Washington, Pennsylvania? So let's pretend the rate in Fort Washington is 1% and your employer is withholding 1% because maybe they didn't do that residency. I forgot, because we did it a few years ago. There's a name for it, this residency verification. So let's pretend you didn't do it. They're withholding 1% in Fort Washington, but you live in Allentown and it's like 1.3 something something.
It's actually 1% where I live, so it's the same.
Oh, it's 1%. Great. So if it's 1% here and 1% in Fort Washington, you're going to file your local tax return. You're going to show the 1% rate and the 1% withholding. You've attached your W-2 to the return. You don't have to worry about equalizing those. What will happen is the Berkheimer or Keystone or whoever it is who manages the local tax, they reconcile that all on their books. They'll go to Fort Washington and grab the 1% and give it to Allentown or vice versa if it's necessary. Okay, so you don't have to do any of that. You're just going to file a local return for Allentown. Okay? All right, I guess Tom got that. So thanks, Tom, for the question. Folks, if you have more, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're taking listeners' questions this evening. If you have questions about taxes, it could be off topic as well if you have other financial choices in your life that you're trying to make. But if you have tax questions, it would be great so that you can get your tax return done. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. Tom, thanks for calling in with that question. Tom had a question about the local tax. If it's the same, the taxing authorities will reconcile it. But it is a good point, let me take this a little further, that if you are someone who works in a jurisdiction that is 1% and you live in a jurisdiction that is higher than 1%, when you go to file your income tax return for your local, if your employer did not withhold the proper rate for your residency, you're going to owe more money. So you'll file your tax return, you'll show a balance due, and you write a check to the local and, you know, pay it, attach your W-2. If you perhaps work in a jurisdiction that might be, live in a jurisdiction that might be 1%, but work in a jurisdiction that might be more than 1%, like Allentown, 1.3 something these days, they keep changing it, you don't get a refund. Years ago, we would get refunds. They don't do that anymore. So whoever has the higher tax gets to keep that difference. So Allentown would keep the, you know, 1.3, and then your local is 1. You don't get a refund. So what we typically do on the local returns is just make the, in that case, make the withholding equal the amount of tax due. And even though you might have had more withheld, that amount just will go to the higher taxing jurisdiction. All right. Again, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. So one of the other issues that's coming up this year is Pennsylvania, with the W-2s, is asking the taxpayer to reconcile their own W-2s. It's getting a little bit interesting because we have to become auditors. Now, as a CPA and a preparer, I have always taken the extra step of trying to reconcile the W-2 wages, the federal to the state to the Medicare wages, and make sure that I understood what those differences were. And I've had to fight with Pennsylvania for many years on particular search situations with deferred comp and different things like that. So you want to make sure that you understand what those wages are. You'd expect that the employers would be filing the W-2s properly and Pennsylvania would accept them as they have filed. But that is not the case. Pennsylvania says that's not the employer's responsibility. It's the taxpayer's responsibility to make sure that they're reporting all of their income correctly. So for those folks who get W-2s where your Pennsylvania wages aren't matching your Medicare wages, you could be in for a little grief. I'll talk more about that in a minute, but I had another call come in. We had Rick from Whitehall call in, and he said a few years ago you could claim washing uniforms for work on your tax return. Is that still allowed? If the uniform is required, Rick. So here's the thing. Again, when we go back to verifying these expenses, for federal purposes, if, let's pretend you have your uniforms laundered, your uniform is required for work, and you pay $100 to have your uniforms laundered. On federal, that's reported on a 2106 on reimbursed employee business expenses. And you may not even get that deduction if you don't itemize or if your income's too high for miscellaneous itemized deductions. So on Pennsylvania, you could take the cost of the uniforms plus the laundering of the uniforms. You just want to make sure that you've kept receipts and kept track of that. That gets reported on the form UE. And just be ready, in case Pennsylvania questions it, that you have backup from your employer that they require the uniform and things like that if you are ever questioned. Okay, thanks for that call, Rick. We also have a call on line one. We have Keith. Keith, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Ready to dive into the question?
Yep, ready to dive in. What you got?
Okay. My wife works for a local university, but does not have an office there.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to understand what potential benefit she would have by being able to claim home office use and have that go against her salary income from this job.
Okay. What happens, Keith, is the home office is a little also particular. It has to be exclusive use. It also has to be the principal place of business, a place to meet clients. So when it's an employee, if the employer does not provide an office and she has nowhere else to go, then you may be able to take a deduction for it. If you are able to take a deduction for it, you have to again fill out that form 2106 on reimbursed employee business expense and home office. It's based on square footage. It has you look at the depreciable amount of the house over the office over the whole value of the house, utilities, real estate taxes, mortgage interest, all of that. Then it's a percentage. It gets reported on the home office form and then flows over to the 2106, and then you may not get a deduction for it if you don't itemize and your income's too high for an employee business expense. So a lot of times it's not worth the extra effort. You might want to see what kind of dollars you're talking about. And then if you might still be able to take some of it on Pennsylvania, but now Pennsylvania is sending notices to everybody. And would the employer be willing to sign off that they don't have an office for her and she really has no choice but to work from home?
Does that... Okay. Yeah, I understand all that then, and I don't think employers have any problem with that. It was worthwhile to us. What is the income limit where you don't get to use that deduction?
Well, you look at page one of your return. It's called the adjusted gross income at the bottom of page one, and it's 2% of that. So if someone makes $100,000, 2% of that is $2,000. So anything over $2,000 gets added up with your other itemized deductions, Schedule A, like your real estate taxes, your income taxes, your mortgage interest, charitable contributions. So it would only be the amount over 2% as a miscellaneous itemized deduction for federal purposes. Now, again, on Pennsylvania, if it's allowed and you're good to go, then it's 3.07% savings. And on your local, it's 1% savings. So it's definitely worth going through it in some cases, but if you're talking $1,000, it might not be worth, the hassle, the $30 you're going to save on Pennsylvania if you're not going to get the savings anywhere else.
Yeah, understood.
Okay.
Can I take you one further now? I thought I understood in the last year or two, the IRS gave you an alternative to doing the actual actual costs for your office and square footage, and had some, I don't know if I want to almost call it default values that could be used?
They just started that. It's called the simplified method, and I think it's $5. $5 a square foot up to 300 square feet, which is $1,500. That's the simplified method. And then you can still take real estate taxes and mortgage interest in full on Schedule A. So you want to read through the forms for that.
All right. Very helpful. Thank you.
All right. Great. Thanks for calling, Keith. Have a good
night.
Bye. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're taking listeners' tax questions tonight. So the show is all about listeners' tax questions. I'm just filling in with other things to talk about until someone calls. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Lots of interesting questions. I appreciate those of you who have called so far this evening. Back to this W-2 reconciliation, I'm sitting here flabbergasted as to what the taxing authorities are expecting for folks to complete these days. Let me tell you about the W-2 reconciliation. If your W-2 shows your Pennsylvania wages and your Medicare wages and they're not the same amount, Pennsylvania is going to expect this W-2 reconciliation. You may not be able to reconcile it yourself without looking at a pay stub. And even with that pay stub, you still may not be able to reconcile it. You have to have an understanding of what Pennsylvania taxes and what they don't tax. I think the Pennsylvania tax guide is, I don't know, I haven't looked lately, but the Pennsylvania tax guide is probably 100 pages of what's, you know, taxable income and what's not taxable income. So it's just amazing to me. On a listserv I subscribed to, a gentleman, a tax preparer, had posed the question to Pennsylvania and said, you know, shouldn't you go to the employers to make sure that they're reporting these numbers right? I mean, they have guidelines. They're supposed to be calculating Pennsylvania taxable wages based on Pennsylvania guidelines. And if they're not, you know, it's flabbergasting to me. I'm sitting here completely dumbfounded myself that Pennsylvania would expect every taxpayer in Pennsylvania to reconcile their own W-2 if they don't understand it, when instead they could just go to the employer. So an employer might have thousands of employees. No, they're not going to go to the employer and tell them to do the W-2s correctly. They're going to go to the thousands of employees and tell them, oh, thousands of employees, figure out your W-2, whether it's calculated properly or not. Totally dumbfounded for me on this. It blows my mind. I can't even contain myself. So the W-2 reconciliation, something to be done. I'll continue talking about this, but let me give the phone number if you do have questions on anything taxes. It could be capital gains tax rates. It could be your 1099-R. How do you read it? Whatever. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And we're taking questions live or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. So briefly, some of the things to reconcile on your W-2 from Medicare wages to Pennsylvania wages are things like Code C. Code C is employer-provided life insurance that exceeds $50,000. That's an adjustment for Pennsylvania. They don't tax that in Pennsylvania. Other items might be employer-provided vehicles and what other things? Non-qualified deferred comp is the biggest problem I see. So if you are someone who works at a company that allows you to do deferred compensation, if it's a non-qualified plan, sometimes it's going to be taxable for Pennsylvania currently, and sometimes it's not. So good luck figuring that out. But Pennsylvania expects you to figure it out and not your employer. We had a caller call in off air, Stephen from Allentown. He said he moved to Pennsylvania December 15, 2015. He lived the first 50 weeks in Virginia of 2015, no wage income at all in Pennsylvania or elsewhere for the past 2 years. Do I have to pay local tax in Allentown where I live now? Income was investment only, interest, dividends, and capital gains. Stephen, great question, especially in our transient society today where people move in and out of states. The local tax, Stephen, is called an earned income tax. They only tax earned income, and earned income is wages or business income. Could be partnership income, not limited partnership. Like if you just have an investment in a limited partnership, that's not included, but actual active earned income. All right, so you don't have to worry about the local taxes. And as far as Pennsylvania goes, if you had no other Pennsylvania income those last 2 weeks, you don't have to file a Pennsylvania return either. Okay, so great question. Just file your Virginia return if you had income. Was it Virginia? Yeah. So just file your Virginia return. You could put on Virginia that you're ending your residency December 15th, and then they won't send you a notice next year looking for a tax return again. Phone number 610-758-8810 for tax questions. I have Bob off air from Allentown. Bob asked, if you have an estate K-1 covering 2014 and 2015, can you report it all in 2015 return or need to amend 2014? Also, anything specific you need to consider or look at with the estate K-1s? Great question, Bob, because this doesn't happen to people very often. What happens with a K-1 that says it's covering 2014 and 2015, what that indicates is the decedent may have died. If it's like a first and final return, they might have died mid-year 2014. Estates are allowed to file fiscal years. A fiscal year could start at any time during the year and end not less than or not more than 12 months past that. So in my example, someone passes away June 15, 2014. If the estate was managed, all done, we finished it up in July or May of 2015, we would have a K-1 that's covering June of 2014 through May of 2015. The K-1 will be marked final. You get K-1 information on that document. It might say interest or dividends. It might have capital loss carryovers. It might have excess deductions. I'll talk about that in a second. So that K-1, though, will show that fiscal year at the end. For tax filing, the estate uses the tax forms for the start of the fiscal year. The beneficiaries use the tax forms for the end of the fiscal year. So, Bob, quick answer. A K-1 that covers both periods, you'll file it on your 2015 return only. You do not separate it. You do not have to worry about where it was earned. That K-1 is based on the fiscal year end period. All right, so in your case, it'll be 2015. So I mentioned, or you had asked, anything specific you need to consider or look at with the estate K-1s? A lot of people might get a K-1 and say, well, there's no income. There was no income. The attorney told me there wasn't going to be any income. The executor told me there wasn't going to be any income. My brother, my sister said, oh, there's no income in the estate. Well, if the estate sold maybe a house, maybe the decedent had a house and they sold it, there could be a loss on that. Maybe there were investments they had losses on. If there are losses, there might not be income, but those might be capital losses that you could use on your own return, and that would benefit you. So you know, if you're using software, you just enter the information off of the K-1 in the section that says fiduciary pass-through. That's what it's called when you get a K-1 from an estate or a trust, a fiduciary pass-through. You report the information in that software, and it'll put it to the right spots. Just make sure you enter it all correctly, and you should be good to go. Now, let me mention also, Bob, that Pennsylvania, there may be a K-1, it's called an RK-1 from Pennsylvania. So if you have a Pennsylvania estate, there should be a K-1 for the federal and an RK-1 for Pennsylvania. And that's going to have a completely different number on it. Federal, for estate purposes, gives us deductions that may offset the income. Pennsylvania does not give us deductions. So the RK-1 for Pennsylvania might say $5,000. That gets reported on Schedule J for Pennsylvania purposes. So I hope that helped. These are great questions, everyone. Thank you for calling. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Now, Mark from Bethlehem called. He said, what is the tax basis of cash in lieu of stock as a result of a stock split? Mark, another great question. I love these. This is what I do for cash in lieu because I just can't be bothered calculating the cost basis on fractional shares. What happens when there's a stock split, a stock merger, not really as much a stock split, but a stock merger. So for example, PPL spun off Talon. So people got shares of Talon and then they got some cash for the fractional shares. So you get a fractional share for 0.145 shares and you get $5. Well, you report the $5 as sale proceeds, and I just use a zero cost basis because I am not going to go through and do a huge calculation of my PP&L stock for throwing, you know, $2 of cost basis on my Talon. So I might just use zero. Your holding period would be the same for the original company. All right. So it's going to be long term in that situation if you held the stock that did the spinoff long term. I hope that helped, Mark. Thank you for that question. We have time for to take a call. OK, Stanley is on line one.
Yep.
Can you hear me, Stanley? Hi. How are you?
I'm in Easton, Pennsylvania.
Oh, OK, good. How can I help you?
Yeah, it's about a 1031 exchange.
Okay.
We have an apartment in New York, which we'd like to sell and not pay the taxes on it. We were wondering whether we could identify a new a property that's being built and not, won't necessarily be done, you know, within that 45-day window, but would be done within 6 months. Is that acceptable for the 1031 exchange?
Yeah, Stanley, off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure, because we don't see 1031 exchanges that often. I'm going to talk to you about that in just a second. Folks, okay. A 1031 exchange is when you exchange like-kind property. So you have maybe a piece of real estate that you own, and it has a huge gain. And if you sell it, you're going to have this huge tax, and you don't want it. So the IRS says, we're going to give you some complicated ways to get around that. And if you replace a new property with that old property, it's a virtually similar nature, like investment property, real estate, the IRS will say that you didn't really sell that first piece. You exchanged it for something so similar, we're not going to make you recognize the gain. So a lot of people will talk about 1031 exchanges to avoid the capital gains tax implications. It's very complicated. You're right. You have to identify the property that you want to substitute for it within 45 days. I do believe that you can do new build. I just went through this with someone recently, but it wasn't new build, but I think I recall seeing that new build could also qualify. I think there is a process for identifying that. The proceeds from the sale of the first apartment has to be in escrow for the whole time. So the implications of that, Stanley, I would want to make sure before you do this that you understand that. Like if you're building and you have to have a deposit down over the time period, is the escrow agent going to be allowed to disperse from the escrow to do that? I'd want to check on that. The other thing I caution people on is, you know, eventually the tax gets, you know, calculated on this. Tax rates aren't too high right now, 15%. So depending on how big of a gain you have on that apartment in New York, which it could throw you up into the 20% bracket if it's like a $500,000 gain. So you just want to kind of run the numbers, too, because sometimes it's not such a bad thing to pay the income tax.
Right,
it depends.
Right.
It depends on how big it is. Okay, but it's complicated. You have to make sure you're working with people who really understand 1031 exchanges, because you do not want to default on that. Okay, it has to be disinterested party, Stan. Remember, you know, people, not your accountant, not your lawyer, and get third parties to help. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Thank you very
much. Have a good night. Lots of great questions. I love this kind of show. If you do have them, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices tonight, and the show is for you. It's called Listener's Tax Questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call on air or off air. Again, that's 610-758-8810. Lots of great questions and very varied questions. Stanley's question on the 1031 exchange, that is a powerful tool that has to be used very, very carefully. So certain options there, you want to make sure you're doing everything right and working with the right people if you're going to do it. 1031 exchanges, sometimes people will ask about doing that and they want to do it with a vacation home that they can go live in. That's not what this is for. This is really typically for investment property. You can't have personal use. It taints the transaction and could throw it out. So you want to be careful and make sure you're doing everything right and use the right kind of people when you're doing that. Okay. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can ask questions on air or off air. Just alerting you to different things in between the questions. We've talked about Pennsylvania unreimbursed employee business expenses. We've talked about a 2106, which is for the federal unreimbursed employee business expenses. We've talked about the health care forms, 1095. We've talked about the W-2 reconciliation for Pennsylvania. Just wait till y'all get those notices when you haven't reconciled it. We've talked about the locals and the withholding and matching up your where you're working versus where you're living. I want to also mention, I've had a couple people ask about filing extensions. Folks who have maybe traveled, they're out of the area, they don't think they're going to be back by April 15th. First of all, so much you can do electronically now with your tax preparer that sometimes you don't have to be home. We can do so much electronically. As long as you have a printer, you can print the authorizations to electronically file. You can electronically send your documents to people. Just make sure you're doing it in a secure fashion. But if you do need to do an extension, as long as you have paid in more than you owe, the IRS, you know, is not going to give you a problem. They want their money, the tax due. So if you are going to file an extension and you think you're going to owe, you definitely want to make arrangements to pay on account with your extension. But if you're using a tax preparer, it's very easy to call and ask them to do an extension. But again, typically they're going to want to make sure they have enough information to know if you owe or not. And if they think you owe, we want to make sure you put in a payment. So if there's a refund, you know you get a refund every year, everything is still the same, then we basically can just file the extension with your approval. So we hit the button, file an extension, federal and state, pretty easy to do. A question had come up recently. Someone had thought that when they received Social Security that they would be penalized or something if they worked. It's not exactly the right language that we call it, but if you start collecting Social Security early before your full retirement age and you're not working, it's not a problem. But if you start working and you earn over a certain amount, so if you're pre-full retirement age and you work and earn more than $15,720, the Social Security Administration is going to want back some of the Social Security benefit they paid you. They're going to want back a dollar for every $2 over. So if you go over the $15,720 in wages and you make $15,820, then you would be $100 over and you would have to pay back $50. If you think this is going to be a regular thing and you're going to be working tons more, you'd want to let Social Security know, and maybe they could adjust it up front so they're not having to make you pay it back the next year. So alert them if you've had a change in employment status. If you think you're going to stay under that $15,000, then that's okay. You're not going to have to pay anything back. It might help if you do make over that amount. It could adjust your benefit in the future because it means you're paying in a little bit more. Probably not adjusting it a ton, but it will adjust it a little bit. So that is a Social Security question. I want to point out to folks that you've got to be careful with Social Security when you're doing tax planning, because what happens with Social Security when you're earning Social Security, collecting a benefit, how much of that gets taxed is based on your other income. So, for example, I had a client I was reviewing a tax return with, and they had, let's say, $50,000 of page one income. And they had $40,000 of Social Security, but only $20,000 of it was taxable. And they said, oh, you know, they were like, their effective tax rate was like 5% because they had capital gains and qualified dividends and all that stuff that qualifies for a zero tax rate. So they said, oh, we should have done a Roth conversion. We should have put more money on our tax return since we're in such a low bracket. Well, just by increasing their income $10,000 for a Roth conversion, if they were going to put $10,000 more on their tax return, it also put almost $8,000 of Social Security benefits as taxable, that much more. So if we're putting $10,000 more on the return, they actually put in $18,000 more of income. So you want to be careful, folks who have Social Security, to play those brackets, be careful what's taxable, how much is includable, and some of the decisions that you're making. It's not always as simple as you think. Just say, oh, I'll put $10,000 more on my return. It's a circular calculation when you have Social Security and you're in that sweet spot of not all of it being taxable. Okay, just a caution. We had Joe call in from Easton. Joe says, I'm getting a pension from a company I used to work for. My wife also has a pension. Both are currently working. He's at a new company. She's at the same company. We get 1099-R forms, but didn't know what is taxable and what is not. Okay, Joe, the 1099-R is the tax reporting document that is issued by plans that are paying pension benefits, and there's going to be box one and box two. Box one is the gross distribution amount. Box two is going to be the taxable amount. If you don't know what the taxable amount is, my guess is it's blank. Now, what I have seen typically is sometimes the paying agent for the employer or former employer may not want to take the responsibility of saying what's taxable. But typically, when you're receiving a pension, it's going to all be taxable. There are situations where it may not all be taxable, but if it's blank in that box, it's probably going to be all taxable for pensions. Again, occasionally it's not all. There's certain like older plans that may have a portion that's not, but typically it's going to be all taxable. So that's, you're looking at box one and box two. Where I've seen that, Joe, is for the folks who were at Bethlehem Steel who are receiving pensions. It's gone through the PGBC, the pension PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And those 1099s always should have an empty box as taxable. So pretty much probably all taxable. All right. 1099R pensions. I think if any of it was not taxable, they would have known that amount and calculated it. But for the most part, typical general rule, it's all going to be taxable. Now, that's for federal purposes. For Pennsylvania purposes, if you're receiving a pension, you're probably over age 59 and a half, normal distribution code 7, and that kind of thing. That gets shown on your Pennsylvania return in the W-2S sheet, but it's not taxable to Pennsylvania. And I should mention that because, as my caller earlier, moving in and out of state here, we have people who move to Pennsylvania and they file their Pennsylvania return and they're used to their pensions being taxed in their state and they just assume it's taxable in Pennsylvania, and that's not the case. The pensions, retirement distributions from IRAs, 401ks, they're not income taxable in Pennsylvania. So not taxable for Pennsylvania, but for federal. Joe, I hope that answered your question, and I appreciate you calling in. I don't think we're going to have time for any more questions, but what I have already decided to do is next week, I'm going to do another show on listeners' tax questions, because this is fun for me. I love it. If people have questions, they can always call in next week, and that number is going to be 610-758-8810. So if you didn't get a call in tonight, didn't get through, you can always call next week. We're going to do this again. And then next week, I'll have some other topics to kind of pay attention to on your tax return. In between questions, I'll tell you how different things are treated on your federal return versus your Pennsylvania return, what you need to pay attention to, some of the things that you might not understand about those tax reporting documents you're getting. Maybe you have a 1099 from your brokerage account and you don't realize that foreign dividends are in there. Maybe it's part of the mutual funds and they sometimes have foreign taxes taken out on them. And that's a deduction for you on page 2 of your return. I assume folks who might have some of those more complicated issues may be using a tax preparer, or maybe you use software and sometimes that software will take you through the proper reporting of those. But you want to make sure that you understand and know what you're supposed to be looking for, what you can expect to see once you've entered all of those numbers, to make sure that you're accounting for them accurately. I also will talk about medical deductions and medical expenses next week. I'm going to make a note to talk about that. The limitations have changed over the past few years. People over 65, the limitation was 7.5%. People under 65, the limitation went up to 10%. But one of the items to note is for people who become elderly, they're maybe in nursing homes and they have these huge medical expenses. If they have retirement accounts, maybe you're the power of attorney for them. Maybe it's your mom in the nursing home or your dad in the nursing home, and maybe they have these retirement accounts. If you have such huge expenses and deductions that your parents don't have any taxable income, you may want to do conversions of IRAs to Roth IRAs and put some taxable income on their return. Because if you have deductions to offset them, you might end up with no income tax. All right, so next week, we're going to have listeners' tax questions, part 2. I want to thank Neil for being here and keeping me on point tonight, and Judy Ann for furiously answering the phone as all those questions were coming in. And I especially want to thank the listeners. I love the listeners of WDIY and especially of Your Financial Choices. And I want to welcome anyone who's new to listening to WDIY since we increased our broadcast power. We appreciate you listening. We hope you're finding it worthwhile and learning lots of new information. And feel free to call in if you have questions as well next week. And that number is 610-758-8810. Write it down, and hopefully we'll be here next week answering your questions as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
This is WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley, 88.1 FM in Allentown, Bethlehem, 93.9 East in Phillipsburg, and 93.7 Fogelsville and Trexlertown.